John Hanson, Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Marcos Resendez joins us now, probate estate planning lawyer. You don't have to hit any buttons, Marcos. You're trying to like turn your mic on. I got you, bud. How you doing?
I appreciate that. Hey,
good to talk to you. We wanted to bring you in because every other week there's a story of someone famous with a big estate who didn't plan accordingly for when they pass. And I think it's always a good opportunity to remind the rest of us that don't have big estates to make those plans, right? Like, those are good examples to jar us awake and say, I don't have a will, I don't have a trust, right?
Yeah, funny enough, they make for great presentation materials, right?
Right.
I've included Aretha Franklin, James Brown, Heath Ledger at one point, which was kind of scary because I had, you know, for shock factor, it was like the Joker face, right?
Oh, and right,
why Heath Ledger didn't have a plan in place.
Right. But I think it also helps democratize it in a way because it's, you don't have to be wealthy. Even the wealthy people, the people that you think would be on top of it aren't. It almost gives you a chance to say, okay, forgive yourself for a moment and put a plan in action, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I had to Google that democratize word that you mentioned. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
Add that to my dictionary. No, for sure. It doesn't, you know, these things happen to all different, you know, economic levels, right? And what I really tell individuals to do is that the estate plan is really for the things that you can't really factor in or think ahead of time. You know, you take a perfect example, like your previous segment, you know, someone is injured, you know, let's say they pass away during litigation. You know, how do we know who's going to continue representing this particular matter? Those attorneys or representatives are going to need, you know, someone's authority from the person that passed away. And if you don't have anything in place, it's really it's up for anyone that, you know, has some kind of priority.
So it's about setting a game plan, but then like talking through all eventualities, which sounds like something I wouldn't be capable of doing on my own. Is that why you recommend people talking to either someone like you or a lawyer? Because you've seen it all, you've heard it all, and you can plan for it all.
Yeah, I would say so. I think what makes it a bit difficult is to get, you know, those hypotheticals because, you know, you're right. I have seen a lot of them, but there's always like this little twist or this little nuance that'll, you know, just change. It could change it entirely from, you know, now we have, you know, six heirs to now we have 12 heirs, you know, and just really a matter of if there were six and then one passed away and then they had children, right? Then it's those children that receive. And then
there's a game plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
When people come to you, generally speaking, do you like to say, oh, trust for sure are the best option, or are wills a great option for people too? Like, I feel like some people feel like sometimes they're pushed one direction or another.
Yeah.
What's your general answer to that sort of question?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm hoping we could be honest here, but it really a lot of times boils down to the economic factor, right? Like, what can you afford? You know, obviously in a perfect world, in a vacuum, the trust would be, you know, where you would want to lead to, because there you have that game plan that you were discussing. I mean, you've ironed out, you know, beyond, you know, your life and then maybe, you know, to several generations after you.
A trust is more comprehensive. You've dipped into the rules, but it's more expensive to get.
It is, you know, for that particular purpose, because the time involved with having to like really lay out this plan that's going to, you know, go further down, you know, the generational line. And then, you know, with respect to you, even while you're still alive, but you can't make decisions. And, you know, this mechanism comes into, you know, force.
We've talked a lot on the show about the advantages of a trust. You avoid probate court. There's tax benefits. There's some, you know, it keeps things a little bit simple. We can maybe dive into that a little later, but we've talked about it a lot on the show. But what I guess I want to leave here with for this, just before we hit this news break, is if you can only afford a will, that's okay too, right? Like, let's start there, right?
Yeah, I'm nodding. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
thank you for telling our listeners what you're doing. Yeah, you're not in a
long. I'm a very like you know, physical mover, right?
Yes.
When it comes to like responses. But no, absolutely. I think that, you know, everyone needs a will. When you have a will and a trust, the will is actually directs your things into the trust. And so everyone should have a will, despite, you know, what you think you may or may not have.
Right. Should that will be left in a couch cushion? I want to talk about that after the news with Marcos Resendez, attorney at law. 773-542-3660 is how you can reach Marcos. 773-542-3660. We are here with Marcos Resendez, attorney at law. Does a lot of probate, estate planning. We're getting some texts in as well. 708 wants to know, I have both a will and a trust. Was that okay or is that too much? Is it ever too much, Marcos?
No.
How do those two things work together?
Sarah, whether you're so prepared for your...
How do those two things work together?
As before the break, I had indicated that like if you have a trust, a will more than likely will have a language in there that says, hey, anything that comes through me or my, you know, me as an individual will be transferred into a trust.
Generally speaking, do you need both?
Yes.
You need both?
If you have a trust, you need it. Well, because the trust is a mechanism that is almost like a separate entity from mm-hmm. yourself.
Right.
And so the things that you have interest in, then you have personal rights to still maintain. And so you still have to kind of direct those to go somewhere.
Meaning not everything in the world that you have, own, or want and have a desire to send to places, not everything is in the box of your trust. Some of it is outside of that.
Correct. It's possible that that happens. I'll give you the example of like, you know, you die in a car accident. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have outlined in your trust. I mean, I guess you could have, right? If I die in a car accident, but more than like people aren't going to know that that was the reason that you, but yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so if you have, now this is a personal interest that you've had, so now your representative, because that was an individual interest, has to use your will that says, yes, once this thing, which is the accident, is litigated and settlement or, you know, whatever, comes through here, the will is directing it to go into this trust.
Okay. So if you were to have won a settlement case, obviously you're dead, let's say.
Yeah.
But your family does on your behalf.
Right.
That would then go to the will, or they'd be looking for will. It doesn't automatically go into your trust unless somehow you've written some crazy rule that makes it happen.
That's right.
So the will would direct it in there. So it's actually a good thing to have.
Yeah.
And it can be maybe a simpler will. It's just like, hey, anything here goes into the trust.
Yeah. And you can still put things in the will that you choose to put in there based on your preference. But yeah, to answer that individual's question, for sure, you're doing pretty good.
Okay. Let's talk about Aretha Franklin. A jury recently noted that a handwritten note by the late soul singer is valid as her will. The documents were found, one was dated in 2014. They were not found until 2019, found underneath a couch cushion.
Yeah.
Let's just start out by saying that's probably not the best way to do this, right?
Yeah, probably not. I think about Aretha Franklin, right? And I think about a person that... as an individual, I'm maybe not the oldest of persons, but mm-hmm. I am getting a little to the point where, you know, I kind of want to do, like, I know how I want to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the ways that I'm going to do these things. And mm-hmm. it seems like Aretha Franklin was just kind of rolling out her own.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There was talk that she at some point was like, you know, speaking to someone to help her, you know, plan her estate, but that might have fallen through. And then I think that there was a will that existed previously, but, you know, they had compared both of them, and you know the arguments were the newer one should count, and then the other side's argument was, well, no, because it can't be valid because it doesn't look like the one that we have, and it
right.
doesn't have that setup, right?
Well, what makes a will valid in Illinois? I mean, is it just, can I write something on a napkin, put it in my pocket or in my wallet and carry it with me at all times, or does someone else have to sign it? Like, legally speaking, what makes it legit?
Yeah, so I think and I actually reached out to a couple of people that I'm on a section group with the Illinois State Bar Association about this, because holographic wills, which is what they're called when they, like Aretha Franklin, she wrote notes and stuff like
mm-hmm.
About her wishes, right?
That's a holographic will.
Holographic will here,
okay.
Yeah. And so
I was picturing a hologram that's like projected somewhere.
Right? That's, what
that's what it sounds like, but no. Okay, a holographic will.
Yeah.
Someone writes a bunch of stuff down. Okay.
Yeah, it might even kind of fit into that Star Wars-y hologram that you just referenced, because it's this image that may appear like it's there, but it, you know, it's just this, you know, picture or whatever, projection, right? So it's, I think that's maybe where
it comes from, right?
Yeah, I could make a link there. But so in Illinois, validity comes in witnesses, right? You have to have two witnesses.
Signed
you have to be
on
a
the
sound
page.
Mind. Yeah, sound. And I believe it's in the presence of, or, you know, within the maybe the purview of the individual. So I'm sitting in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that you're doing something over there. And so if you sign something, I witnessed him sign something. And he looks pretty, you know, able to sign. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look like he's fumbling his words. He doesn't look like there's any sort of incapacity that would, you know, invalidate this thing that I just saw him sign.
So the witness just has to witness you doing it and yeah. seeing that you're in sound state. That yeah. witness doesn't have to necessarily know every little detail of what you just signed.
No. And, you know, I sort of counsel people in that. And I say, you know, because you can't have a relative, right? Or it's frowned upon to have a relative because there is the possibility that that in some strange way, that relative might be someone that becomes interested, right? And so if they're a witness, now it looks a little weird. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're getting money. You witnessed it.
I see.
No good.
So signed by two witnesses.
Yeah, signed by two witnesses.
Okay.
The signature of the individual, obviously, right?
And dated, I assume?
Yeah, dated, initialed, you know, you can do, and then now we're talking sort of this extra layer of protection, right? So notarization is good, useful, right? Because now you have a third party, you know, that's a, you know, an actual notary with a certificate that's saying, hey, yeah, I saw this take place. Mm-hmm. Initials on every page, you know.
So pages couldn't have been inserted after the fact.
Right, exactly.
Or in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess this is a long way of saying, yes, you could probably write one yourself.
Yeah, right.
You could have two people sign it and date it and initial it.
Yeah.
And a judge or a jury might ultimately determine that to be A-okay. But there is a benefit to having a lawyer look it over and do it with you. Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. It's not just a matter of, you know, what I see in front of me, right? There's plenty of laws in place around to make sure that, you know, certain things require certain provisions. So in a will, you can place, and I think we may have discussed this before, an interim clause, right? Which says, hey, if someone tries to contest this will, you know, they get disqualified, you know, completely. And so, you know, that has to be like a conscious decision, eliminating someone from, like, let's say you have a daughter or a son that you say, you know what, I don't want them a part of this. You have to put in language in there that disqualifies them. So if you make a will, you know, at home on your couch,
right,
and you didn't factor those things in, those things are left open, you know, to potential litigation, argument, you know, he said, she said, things like that.
So you got to spell a lot of things out.
Yeah, I think
if
it's
you
important
wanted to be. Yeah, for sure. We asked earlier if you have a trust, you need a will, and you said yes. If I have a will, do I need a trust? I guess that gets into a broader discussion of whether it's worth the money for you, right?
Yeah, it is. And again, in a vacuum, absolutely, it's good because then, you know, you may avoid, you know, probate if you have a trust in place, and, you know, you wouldn't have to go that route because you've established things to protect you from this extra layer of guidance, right? Because that's what courts are supposed to do, guidance. They're supposed to figure out arguments or resolve arguments, right? So that the matter of the law, according to the facts and scenario, are what they are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Trust, as I've come to understand it through talking with you or other estate planner, is essentially a box of where you put all your stuff and it avoids probate. Can you explain really quickly what probate is?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, can you explain what a box is?
No.
I said, in this context, sure, why not? Yeah. Probate is the legal process for determining how an individual's affairs should be wound up. It's probably like the carefulest way that I can phrase that, but someone passes away and they died with assets. Let's say they had a house or a car. And maybe a 401k IRA policy. And they didn't leave a beneficiary. They didn't have a will. They didn't have a trust. And so now a representative, and we don't know who that is if they didn't have a will or a trust.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the surviving spouse. If there's no surviving spouse, it could be kids, right? And then at that level, it's really, there's no assigned preference. And so any one of those children can be a representative. But let's go beyond that. You go to court and you establish all your assets. And then ultimately the court helps you and you help it decide who gets what at the end of it.
Okay. Also, I know with probate, if you owed someone something, they get to get to it first. There's all sorts of companies that use like AI software to scan obituaries to find you when you die and to try and get the money from you, right?
That's news to me, but I can totally see that. Absolutely, 100%.
For sure.
Because everything is accessible, right?
100%. Hey, we got a lot of questions on the text line. I'm going to ask you them off air, though, first, because I don't even understand what they're asking. I want to make sure you do.
Yeah.
Marcos Resendez joining us, 773-542-3660, probate, estate plan, and all that great stuff. Marcos Resendez, attorney at law, probate, estate planning. Give him a call, 773-542-3660. A couple interesting text questions coming on in. If I have a will and all my assets have beneficiaries on them, such as a transfer on death for the house, payable on debt for all bank accounts, beneficiaries for annuities, IRAs, our estate lawyer talked us out of a trust. Our value of our estate's about $1.4 million. That might be all buttoned up and okay, right?
Yeah, that sounds, you know, way better than, you know, some people that I've seen that, you know, come out that haven't like adjusted or set up, you know, payable on death and transfer on death, which we call TODIs, because they're transfer on death instrument.
Okay.
But I think it's a solid plan if, you know, he said he's discussed it with his attorney. So, you know, this valuation that they've made with their attorney. And, you know, that's been the result of whatever that I look at a $1.4 million estate and I have more questions, you know, because it's, not, you know, all clients are obviously very important, but the details that, you know, on the stuff that they have is also very important. And so if you have, you know, five houses, it's not the same as having like one house, you know, with respect to like, what are we going to do with all of this? And so I believe it's a preferential or a preference on the individual. But, you know, if outside of that, right, if an individual wanted to put in their trust that, you know, I do have this, these assets, and instead of just giving a lump sum to three children that I have, I want to instead say I want to provide to not only my children, but also my grandchildren and this church that I've gone to for like many, many years. Or, you know, one of my neighbors that, you know, has been around for many, many years.
Right. So I what you're saying is great plan. And if that works for them and the lawyer seems to like it's all buttoned up, awesome. Let's applaud people for putting plans together.
Absolutely.
Great work. But a trust could, in theory, if they wanted to go that route, they don't have to. Let's say they don't even have grandchildren yet. Yeah. A trust could start envisioning the possibility of grandchildren, provide for them, provide for the neighbor, something like that, the church.
Yeah.
It's a mechanism. A trust is a mechanism that deals in hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Like that's the whole point of a trust, right?
Sure. I think so, yeah.
872 says, I live in a house with two other people. They're both sisters, but one of the sisters passed away in June. So I think this person bought the house with their two sisters. They still have a mortgage till 2031, but one of the sisters passed. And the sister that passed had credit card debt. Are we responsible for her debt? And or will creditors put a lien on the house?
Yeah. That's a tricky one, right? Because, you know, the debt, like personal debt obligations from an individual after they pass away are shouldn't be your responsibility and are not your responsibility. However, in this case, you know, there this situation, there's an asset, right? And so could the creditor say, well, you know, you have assets
that are shared.
Yeah, that are shared and say, well, okay, a third of it in this situation, a third of it, you know, is accessible to me as a creditor to try to get some funds. And so maybe in that situation, yeah, you know, it does, the debt sort of belongs to you, right? Because it's part of this.
Part of your overall estate.
Yeah, exactly.
That you own, but since she owned a part of it, creditors could theoretically access part of that.
Yeah.
Is there something, if you have credit card debt and you're, can you write in, is there anything you can do in a will or a trust to protect your relatives in those situations?
Yeah, absolutely. There's provisions within the trust, which is, they're called the spendthrift clause, which is
spendthrift.
Spendthrift clause, which actually is in essence to avoid that, that if you can't bring your debt obligations into this trust situation and use that to, you know, create that interest by the creditor to come get your benefit from. I'm using my hand. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So you can protect the what you have in your trust from creditors in certain using certain language.
Yep.
Okay. Are wills and trusts handled the same way in different states? My attorney in Illinois will not make up a will for Oklahoma where my son lives. He says he's not licensed for Oklahoma. How do I sort that out? That seems to make sense, right?
And not only that, John, but where we were off, I said, let's get back to Aretha Franklin for a second. And this actually just does bring us back because Michigan, I think, is where it took mm-hmm. place. I forgot the county, but Michigan, where that action took place, the holographic wills are acceptable. And what the law there says, I'm not licensed in Michigan, but I read the statute. Mm-hmm. It says that if there's material language in the will and it's signed at those places, then it could be considered and accepted as a will.
So location matters.
Yeah, location matters for
sure. And it makes sense that a lawyer would say, I can't write a will for Oklahoma. I'm not licensed to practice there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they say, how do I sort this out? LegalZoom? Or should the son in Oklahoma look for an attorney, estate planner there?
Yeah, I would say if you can get someone that's licensed, you know, there. Sometimes you're in a situation. So, like, I have family, you know, all over the states. And so I'm de facto the attorney for everybody, you know. And so I do my best to comply with local laws.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'll say it that way.
but you can be their attorney even though you didn't pass the bar in every single state.
Yeah, there's an option, and it's a Latin term that allows you to use the license of another, like, through them to be able to practice with them.
Okay. All right. Yeah, but that's so not unusual for a lawyer to say, I'm not going to do that in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I guess I could see that.
Okay. You don't sound so definitive.
Well, you know,
okay, I'll just tell him to call you.
Yeah, there you go.
Call Marcos. He'll talk you through it.
Just help.
Yes. Well, I imagine that's what you like doing. I mean, you talked to me off air about how you represent a lot of families, elderly folks that, you know, rely on you, trust you. You go to their homes, you talk to them, and it must be a rewarding career.
Yeah, I think so. I've been doing it for some time, and when you get that, you know, letter or card around Christmas that says, like, you know, thank you so much for helping me. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, this is exactly why this is supposed to be done.
Right, for sure. Marcos, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.